Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. A church had a simple ask: remove a dangerous homeless encampment before the Tacoma Greek Festival. Will the city listen? That is what's trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
Apparently, this Greek festival is in a week. We're a week away. And suddenly, a homeless encampment popped up across from St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church on Tacoma's Hilltop neighborhood. And parishioners, like this one, speaking with Cairo 7 TV, said it's dangerous.
It's not even so much the tents, but our church secretary, for example, lives a block away. And yesterday, she was accosted again by one of the people that live in the encampment. And, you know, it's dangerous.
Now, of course, that's not shocking to anyone that she was merely accosted, is the story. That it didn't even go further than that, where she wasn't physically assaulted, where we don't get a whole lot of reports of people just being randomly attacked. I know that there are some on the radical left who want to pretend that all the homeless are perfect gentlemen and ladies. They never do anything untoward. They never pose a risk. These are just like you and me. They were one missed paycheck away from landing out on the streets. When the reality is, many of them are dealing with mental illness. Many of them are dealing with an addiction, and many of them are, in fact, dangerous. You can pretend all you want, but all the stories that we cover on a regular basis indicate otherwise. And so he and others have complained to the city. They complained to the county. They wrote emails, they made phone calls, but so far, radio silence. No response. No commitment to cleaning this encampment. Now, that's not always been the case. They had an incident in which they called and did, in fact, get an encampment swept. But this time, for some reason, no one seemed all that interested in doing their jobs. Cairo says that just a year ago, three homeless encampments formed a kind of semicircle around St. Nicholas. Days before last year's Greek festival, the city of Tacoma removed the encampments. It's always weird how they pop up around the Greek festival. Maybe they're just fans. Maybe they like feta. So this is happening. And you would expect maybe now that the city would definitely move, because they passed a law, an ordinance, that bans encampments from forming within a 10-block radius of a shelter. And apparently there's a shelter that falls within the 10-block radius. And so they can't quite figure out why they're not moving, why they're not coming in and sweeping up this encampment the way that they're supposed to. They certainly have to understand that going into a festival, you're going to have an increased number of people in the area. You have to understand that these encampments can pose a significant and clear and obvious threat. Now, Deborah Horn, who likes to shoehorn herself into every single one of her reports by including her voice, she did an interview with one of the homeless people there, and I'm teasing her. She's the best. She claims, this homeless woman claims that, oh, no, I'm about to move. Don't worry. Hang in there.
Have you been having difficulty finding a place to live?
Oh, yeah. I'm having a difficult time. I didn't get...
By the way, what do you think the answer to that question is?
No.
Homeless person, dear homeless person, are you struggling to find a place to live? No. What are you talking about? I can afford it. I just choose not to.
Well,
my God. That's not a ridiculous question.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been having difficulty finding a place to live?
No.
Oh, yeah. Great. I'm having a difficult time. I didn't get my Social Security check Friday. Yeah. So I'm just hoping it's there Monday. They signed for it. So I just have to pick it up tomorrow.
Definitely.
And then I'll be out of here.
Oh, okay. I bet that's the case.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll be gone.
She really was one missed cash check away from landing out on the streets. I guess we found the one. Now, I love this part of the story. They say over at Cairo 7 that folks who are either with the church or some of the folks who live in the area, they put up boulders in the area. It's known as hostile architecture, which basically means we're putting stuff up in the way so that you can't just camp out comfortably. They say they were able to do that, quote, with the city's blessing. So the city won't clear the encampment, but they'll say, oh, yeah, sure, if you want to put up boulders, go for it. My back hurts. I don't really want to do any work today. Is that what's going on here? The city is not doing its job. They're not clearing this encampment. Cairo reaches out to the city of Tacoma, doesn't get a response. What is going on? The same policy that has been plaguing our cities, not just Tacoma, for the last several years, where we have ceded over our public spaces that we're supposed to enjoy, that we're supposed to be able to use. We ceded it over to the homeless. We ceded it over to the people who don't follow rules, who break laws, who have zero respect. All while progressives look at this and say, oh, we're so compassionate because we're not sweeping these people. We're not pushing them into shelter. That lacks compassion. The only thing that should get the city to move is if we can give them basic services, including a subsidized house for the rest of their lives. Which, of course, keeps folks within the homeless industrial complex happy, but not necessarily does any good for the homeless people who get that subsidized housing, whether it's a homeless hotel or an apartment. They get it without any preconditions. So if you're an addict and that's the reason why you're homeless, you can continue to use while in that subsidized unit, which, by the way, you're not going to spend all your time in. So these homeless people who are addicted are still going to go out into the community, commit a crime in order to feed their drug habit. So you've not actually done anything except make someone for one of these non-governmental agencies or organizations. You made them a whole bunch of money. You've given them job security while not actually helping the people where I think we have a moral obligation to help, nor are you helping anyone in the community who's dealing with the impacts of bad policy. But other than that, Tacoma's doing an amazing job, and kudos to them. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Amazonia?
The Puget Sound Business Journal, they got an internal memo from Amazon that basically told the employees, we're going to start reviewing your badges, the swipes. We got badge reports that go back several weeks, and we can tell when you're swiping to go in and out of the offices. And the reason why they're doing this is because they have a policy that says you have to go into the office 3 times a week. That's it. That is all they're asking. It's going to get to full time in the new year. When? I don't know. But that's the end goal. So they're doing the baby steps. 3 days a week, you have to be in the office. I think Tuesday was the only one that was basically mandated for everyone. But then they said it's up to your individual teams for the other 2 days, something like that. And of course, lots of people were complaining. They protested. Some of them are not going in. They're just choosing to ignore the rule, which is rather remarkable for an employee. Just to say, yeah, nah, whatever. I know the boss told me I have to come into the office. Eh.
Not for
pass.
Me. Yeah, not for me.
I like not having to brush my teeth or put on clothes before going to wall. I like just staying here and being a total slob and doing the work from home. Now, this is technically a policy change for them to go ahead and check the badge swipes. MyNorthwest.com says, until this week, reports were generated from an aggregated perspective and didn't break them down to individual employees. Spokesperson Rob Munoz said, this tool gives employees and managers visibility into the days they badged into a corporate building. The information will help guide conversations as needed between employees and managers about coming into the office with their colleagues. An unusually direct and clear statement coming from a spokesperson. Because usually, oh, you know, this is part of our business practices. We like to get a better sense of where employees are so we can meet them where they are. You kind of get that doublespeak. No, he's basically saying, and almost directly saying, yeah, we're going to check to see if you're not coming into the office. And if you're not, you're going to have a conversation with your manager. And ultimately, that conversation is going to be, well, you're terminated if you continue to choose not to follow the rules and get into the office where we're paying you to do your work. You don't like it? That's totally fine. You don't have to work here. Now, I have sympathy for the people who were hired during COVID and were told, because folks didn't know any better, that you don't ever have to come back into the office. We hired you out of the office. You don't have to come in ever. I have sympathy for those people. Some. I would argue that you should probably realize that pandemic was not going to be here forever, and at some point you would have to come in. I have no sympathy for those people who refuse to come in for a couple days a week or 3 days a week when you worked in the office the entirety of your Amazon career before the pandemic? Again, I get you don't like going into the office. The great news about working in this country, you don't have to work for Amazon. You can choose to work there or choose to work somewhere else. Same way they can choose to fire you for not doing your job. And at some point, they're going to start terminating people because they have a culture that they need to uphold. And they have a business that is not doing as well as some people who just hate capitalism would have you believe. You lose a lot when you're not in the office. You lose a lot. And a company like Amazon, they have been known to just look at all the data points right on everything. All the decisions that they make from a business perspective is based on the raw data. They get the raw data, they interpret the results, and then they either change directions or they double down, triple down, whatever it is. And they looked at the results of this workforce that was staying at home, and they said, yeah, this doesn't work for us anymore. You're missing out on day-to-day interactions. You're already computer engineer, so you're socially awkward as it is. So now we need to come in. This will be a benefit to you because you'll learn how to communicate with people face-to-face. And, of course, the non-engineers, the program managers, the marketing people and whatnot, you get more stuff done when you're in the office. You get to actually walk over to someone and ask them a conversation, or even in passing say, oh, hey, Bill, by the way, so-and-so, we forgot to check on this. It's coming along? Oh, you'll have it by 4? Great, cool. Rather than checking with someone on Teams saying, are you there? Are you there yet? It says you're green. It says you're available. Why aren't you responding? And then you see that they looked at your message, but they don't respond. You're like, I saw it says the little eyeball shape is next to my comment. You saw it. Why aren't you responding? Then you call and then they pick up and you realize rather quickly why they didn't answer you the first time. They were having a Jeffrey Toobin moment and they forgot to turn off their camera. It's just a real big mess. Get into the office. I don't know why I get so triggered by this. These stories just trigger the heck out of me. It just seems lazy.
Well, it's 3 days a week. It's not that much.
Oh, we had to go into the office.
You still get Mondays and Fridays from home.
Oh, we have to go into work. It's so hard. Do you know how hard it is to commute? Yes, I do. Thank you. Next. And everyone else is in the exact same position. They made a choice as to where they're going to live, and they have to deal with that. It's like me complaining about not having a car. I don't complain about not having a car. I often complain about when I do have a car.
That's fair.
I don't complain about, man, it's just so tough getting to the office. I don't own a car. Yeah, and? Imagine what my boss would say if I told her that. Be like, yeah, and? Wait, so you're choosing not to have a car and you're complaining about not being able to get into the office? Okay. You know you can change that by getting a car if you'd like. I just don't want to.
Then he wouldn't have 30 minutes of content railing on Hertz.
Oh my God, they're the worst. Push the button.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
Well, some people who get stuck in traffic decided to buy into the silly pitch from Washington State Ferries that, hey, you can live such a better lifestyle if you just relied on the ferries. Stop living in Seattle. Stop living in Everett. Stop living in Tacoma. Live across the way, across the waters, the beautiful waters that you can be sailing upon on this majestic ferry. Watch the little orcas and the big orcas, although they're all emaciated because they're not eating any salmon. Just do little swimming and you know, jumping into the air, although they can't because they're so weak from not eating. But you can maybe see a carcass of one that's just floating over there because one of our ferries hit it. It would be so amazing to live that lifestyle. Read a book. Answer emails. Instead of being stuck in your car, in your commute. And people are all like, yeah, okay, fine, I'll do it. And they move to places like Bainbridge. And they find themselves, of course, in a position where the ferry never works. It's broken down all the time. The schedule changes all the time. They have projects for construction that last longer than it should. Then they're stuck in line for longer than they're supposed to be. Only now, they get to wake up and say, oh, now I'm paying more for the privilege of not being able to use the ferry system in any meaningful way. every single route is going to see a 4% increase in ticket prices. It already has gone into effect. I think it went into effect yesterday. But today, for the commuters, is the first time that they really noticed it. Because the new transportation budget requires that ferries generate $419 million in revenue. And so they raised the prices by 4%. Next year, they're going to raise them again. Now, they say, according to the Washington State Transportation Commission, fares fund 57% of operations and maintenance, to which I say, what maintenance? It breaks down all the time. This is not maintenance. Maintenance implies you're doing something preventative. You're just keeping up with everything. And, you know, every once in a while, something will come up and you're just maintaining a working ship. But when they stop working, you're no longer maintaining. You are fixing. So stop this nonsense that you're spending all this money here. You're not. I don't know what it is you're spending. I'm guessing it's more on the salary side of operations than on the actual operations of your stupid ferry, because they break down too often. And to, especially after the last year and a half of the constant breakdowns, the constant shifting in routes, for you to raise the prices now, I mean, what a slap in the face.
I would be so mad if I was any kind of island commuter.
It would be one thing if the system actually worked, or usually worked.
Yeah, it was somewhat reliable.
Things go wrong. We get it. Every once in a while, fine. Most of us are willing to give that a pass. It's just bad luck. We got it. But so much of what we're experiencing now was preventable. They chose not to maintain their ferries. They chose to have a law up until recently that forced the state to only purchase ferries that were produced and manufactured here in Washington state, which jacked the prices up incredibly. They didn't have a budget for that. You guys ruined the ferry system. I'm not aware of anyone being terminated for anything that they've done in mismanaging the ferry system, but then you're going to come out and say, oh no, we're going to increase rates. No, how dare you? And the thing is, right now, people listening who take the ferry, you have nothing that you can do right now to change this. You just have to sit there and take it. You just have to pay more. But understand that these are all political decisions that are made. You could make the choice to get better educated on the candidates who run for office, who represent you in Olympia, and you can say, yeah, you know what? You touched this before. You had something to do with ferry. Yeah, then you're out. I want nothing to do with you anymore. We're done. You can go with someone who actually is going to hold folks to account, which, by the way, includes our next governor. This is happening under Jay Inslee. You think Bob Ferguson is going to be any different? They have the same ideology. Bob Ferguson is more competent than Inslee. Inslee doesn't know how to use a calculator. Bob Ferguson knows how to use his own iPhone. But I don't think anything's going to change. Except for the price that you're paying to get on that silly ferry. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
Today was day one of the fraud trial for Donald Trump in New York. Joining me on the line is someone who's been following. He can explain it all for us. He's a lawyer. He's also Newsweek opinion editor, or editor at large. Josh Hammer, welcome to the show.
Jason, always a pleasure.
So if you could just briefly explain what this set of charges actually entail.
So this is actually a civil lawsuit. So it's not technically criminal charges. And for that reason, I think it's a lot easier to forget about this. I mean, in the interest of full disclosure, Jason, I almost forgot about this before resurfacing the news over the past 2 weeks. I mean, there's so much legal drama right now and these actual criminal indictments around Donald Trump that it's very easy to sometimes forget about these civil lawsuits, and he's had many. I mean, there was a defamation lawsuit, but this particular one is a civil lawsuit that has been launched by Tish James, the very left-wing attorney general of the state of New York. And they're essentially accusing Trump of operating the Trump Organization, his business, as a fraud, of grossly inflating the company's net worth of their assets for the ends of securing more favorable bank loans, and then just kind of branding himself as being a multi-billionaire and kind of other kind of more ethereal concerns as well there. But it's a sweeping allegation, and we'll see if it holds up.
I've seen a lot of reporting just specifically on his Mar-a-Lago estate and its worth, and a judge basically saying that it was deceptive the way that he overvalued his assets, including his Mar-a-Lago estate. But at the same time, as far as I recall, and I haven't seen this in any of the lawsuit, none of the banks had any red flags for what was told to them, correct?
That's correct. I mean, nothing that I've seen so far. I have not seen any kind of damning red flag here. I mean, look, does Trump tend to kind of exaggerate and bloviate a little bit by nature? Sure, of course. I mean, that's kind of the way that the guy built himself up into the universal global icon that he is. That's how he was on the covers of all the magazines going back as far as 1980s, 1990s. I mean, he was a universal celebrity along the lines of a Michael Jordan or a Michael Jackson or whatnot by the time that he decided to enter politics in the first place. And he didn't get there by not exaggerating a little bit, that is who he is. But I have not seen anything that would even remotely resemble a smoking gun. Some of the numbers that have gotten a lot of attention are the fact that Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida was estimated at potentially as low as $18 million. Well, first of all, I'm not a homeowner yet. I'm currently renting an apartment, but you know, God willing, I will be a homeowner one day. And every homeowner is familiar with the idea that you have tax assessors and loan assessors who can do equity value, enterprise value. I mean, again, I'm not an accountant, but there are various different tools that accountants have to assess properties for slightly different reasons. It's fairly standard tools of the trade. It's not anything that kind of leaps off the page as being evil or gimmicky or anything like that. And, you know, I've talked with even some liberals, Democrats, supporters of the other 2024 Republican presidential primary candidates who fairly unanimously, based on my own conversations, all see this particular action from Tish James as a severe threat at business integrity, at entrepreneurs' ability to run their own businesses, to contract with their own accountants, their own tax assessors, things like that there. It really seems like she's overreaching. And unfortunately, from that perspective, this civil action is very much in line with the broader string of legal overreaches that Democrats and the left have tried to do for a long time now against Trump. And of course, that they're still doing in criminal indictments all across the country.
You have John Yoo on the right and Eli Honig on the left basically saying the same thing, which is Team Trump expects to lose this and then win on appeal. Is that generally an observation you would make?
Yeah, so the judge here, based on what I have seen, seems to not be a particularly pro-judge, I think would be a polite way of saying it. Arthur Engoron, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly. Judge Engoron is not considered favorable to Trump. It's worth pointing out that the judge actually, earlier today, announced that nobody asked for a jury trial, which I find a little curious. If the judge is this reputed to be anti-Trump, why Trump's lawyers wouldn't have requested a jury trial. Of course, not that would have necessarily make it a whole lot
better.
You're not
going to get a pro-Trump jury.
Exactly. So, it's kind of, you know, pick your poison from a certain perspective there. But certainly, it does not seem favorable for him at the trial level. The appeals courts in New York generally are considered to be a little more reasonable. These are more sophisticated jurists, all things equal. You know, you'll find some nutcases here and there, of course. That's just how it ultimately breaks down. But yeah, I would be bullish on his chances on this one. If I were advising Trump, this is not one of the ones that I would be most worried about, certainly. This is not anywhere near, for example, the Georgia prosecution.
There you go. Josh Hammer is the editor at large over at Newsweek. He's an attorney, and of course, you hear him on KTTH filling in for me from time to time, including last week. Thank you so much for filling in, and thank you so much for stopping by today.
Always a pleasure, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to take a dive into the big local right here on KTTH.
Big Local on The Jason Rand Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They are online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in San Juan County because they are starting a 32-hour work week for some employees. It went into effect today. It is designed to succeed because government is very, very, very inefficient. Very inefficient. Which means it's nearly impossible to truly judge how much work is getting done in a 32-hour work week. Right? It's like, well, we didn't meet this goal, but we're the government. We never meet it anyway. And so if they couldn't meet the goal in a 5-day traditional work week of 40 hours, they're not going to be able to do 32 hours. Now, King 5 notes that the county said the plan is guided by the 180-100 rule. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Because they made it up.
Okay, good. I don't feel so bad.
I'm pretty sure this is not an actual rule, but one that they just came up with. Employees receive 100% of their pay for 80% of the hours for 100% of the output. Dare I say that if 80% of the hours, in that amount of time, you can do 100% of the work, you did not assign enough work to the employee.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable to assert.
If you decided on before this, we have a 5-day work week, we're coming up with responsibilities for employee X. His name is Xavier. And it's supposed to fill 40 hours a week, and we, you know, or we give a little bit of time for, you know, lunch, I guess. And they're done in 80% with 20% left of their work week, then you didn't give them enough work.
Yeah, or if you're doing 40 hours of work in 32 hours as the employee, you should argue to get paid more.
Oh, but they say this will be so that they can avoid paying more. Now, I was thinking as I was giving my example of an hour for lunch, even though I don't think people traditionally take an hour anymore. I don't know. I only work in radio, so I know we'll eat like at our desks. And I get mad when you go out for a walk to go pick up Subway or something. Because
they close the Subway. Good, I wish I could go get Subway.
No, this is a godsend. Get to work. But even if we were to consider an hour, which I do think is still generous for most places, that's just 5 hours. So they're going to 32. They're not even going to 35. They're going to 32, which implies you're still getting your hour's worth of lunch for those 4 days. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. So now you're working even fewer hours.
That is pretty wild.
County Manager Mike Thomas, speaking with King 5, says the new measure will help employees with their personal lives, as if any of us should care about their personal lives.
I think by giving them a little bit more personal time, we're going to see a sharp reduction in people taking time off, whether that's sick time or, like I alluded, you know, it's time to run errands to the mainland to get some service.
Oh, I guess island living isn't quite what it's made out to be. How would this lead to fewer people who are sick? They're still going to get sick. You're just going to have one fewer day that they can take off when they're sick. That's all it means.
I think the thought would be they would be more rested and less prone to getting sick.
No, if you're well rested, you're not doing it right. You're not working correctly. You're not supposed to feel well rested. What are you doing? I go to bed at 7 and I wake up at 6 a.m. Well, that's too much. You're depressed. You're sleeping too much. Yeah, but I'm not tired. Yeah, but you're depressed. That's the problem. Is it truly healthy to go to work and be like super high energy and well rested if you're truly committed?
You would get annoyed with me.
I would. I want you to be tired because that indicates that you're working hard. Now, I'm hard to please. I acknowledge that. And certainly some industries are going to be a little bit different. Teachers, for example, should come well prepared because it's and well rested because it's not like they work all year round. And they certainly don't work full 8-hour days. Nurses the same way. Firefighters, hey, there's not a fire 24/7. You're in your little firehouse the whole time. Once every 10 days, you go out and put out a fire. Once you relax. And by the way, it's raining here. So God is helping you. Someone's going to think I was serious.
How did this turn anti-firefighter?
They say the county is confident that employees will continue to provide the same quality of service and output the public has come to expect, which is very little. That's according to their website. I added that last part. The program will be reviewed periodically to make sure services are being maintained. But the reality is this means fewer hours for customer service. Fewer hours that, you know, a worker is available to give you your permit or to go, right? Like, if you have to go down to an office, and sometimes, unfortunately, that's precisely what you have to do, you're hoping that there's time for you to go before or after work. This guarantees that that's not going to be the case for those particular employees who are impacted, right? I mean, there's nothing worse than we're only open from 9 to 5. But I work 9 to 5. How am I supposed to get to you? Are you open on weekends? No. Can I do it over the phone? No. Well, when am I supposed to do it? During lunch. But everyone's going to have to do it during lunch, and then you won't have any room for an appointment. And by the way, when do I eat lunch? Jason says you shouldn't be eating lunch. Food is for home. Plus, the county cited studies that show 32-hour work weeks are associated with high productivity. That's a lie. Greater job satisfaction. Well, yeah, because
you're not working
as much. Less absenteeism. Yeah, because you took one day out of the week off.
Yeah, the math on that, obviously.
Otherwise, let's say you get sick on a Wednesday and you're sick throughout the weekend. You would have taken Friday off, and you're still taking Friday off. You're sick. You're just not working for it. So dumb. And greater recruitment and retention of employees. Yeah, the worst kind of employees. You're talking about the just out of college, 20-something-year-old kid. This is maybe their first real job. And they were interested because, ooh, I only have to work 4 days a week. That sounds great. Do I get still 3 weeks off of vacation? And can I still get some personal time off throughout the week? You know, just a mental health break. Well, that's your Friday. Yeah, but sometimes you need one on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, but also a Thursday and the Friday. You don't know my life. It's stressful. I have to pay back my student loans after getting 2.5 years of not having to pay anything. Well, I was working full time the entire time, by the way. Ugh. Get Amazon employees who don't want to go into the office. Get them to work in San Juan County. Maybe some of them moved over to San Juan.
Well, then they have to take the ferries. Ugh. It all ties together.
No, maybe I said they moved to San Juan County.
Well, then they
don't have to take the ferries.
Oh, okay, fair. They're already there.
Yeah, they're already there.
But then they're stuck. Who wants to be stuck there?
How about them? You know what? God forbid, you guys, any of you who are doing this, you ask for remote work, I'm going to strangle you to death.
Wow.
We're done. We are done. If you dare say on a 32-hour work week, well, can I work from home on Mondays? No, you can't.
And Thursdays?
And some to every other Wednesday? No. God, the people are lazy. When did this happen? Are we just blaming this on COVID?
Probably.
I feel like the 30-hour work week or 32, whatever it is, the 4-day work week, that was clearly before COVID. I remember Tim Ferriss, that scam artist. Everything he does seems like a scam. Other than that, he's an amazing person. Don't sue me. But he put out the 4-hour work week. And I remember looking at it, and even at the time, because I was young at the time. I think I was in college. Find out when it came out. Originally the 4-hour work week. I feel like I was in college, and I remember reading, and maybe it was just after college, but I remember reading this book and saying, none of this makes any sense. It's never going to work. And one of his little rules was, you know, a part of this is just not checking your email after a certain time period. And it was even like you set aside like 2 or 3 hours that you'll check email. And then outside of those 2 or 3 hours, you'll have a auto reply that says, I appreciate you sending me an email, but please note I only check my email between 10 a.m. and 10:15 a.m. on Tuesdays, and I'll get back to you. If you need me in any urgent way before then, well, you're out of luck. When did it come out?
2009.
So 2009, it was a little bit after my college. I graduated in 04. But I just remember saying, like, this just seems selfish and lazy. Oh, but you can automate your days and become a multimillionaire. Doing what? I don't know. Read the book. I did. I still don't understand what you're asking of me, other than to work less but make more money. Sounds great. How do I do it? Read the book. No, I just told you I read the book. It doesn't really tell me. Yeah, we'll read it again. I know it's making you a lot of money.
We trying to cut down to 4 shows a week?
No. It's too lazy. I don't even like taking 4 days of vacation.
You'd have a better work-life balance.
I don't want a better work-life balance. I'm doing what I can. I will say this. last week. So this is probably, in retrospect, a mistake when you're trying to sell books, because you would assume that the people who are most likely to buy my book, What's Killing America, which I got paid to do and everything, would be this audience. And so I wasn't on air for my release week. I was doing television and radio interviews across the country. Sales were really great. We got into the bestseller list on Amazon. We're not there anymore because you're only going to be there for a few days unless you're just like exploding. But it turns out that if I were to sell 40 books today, I would get back on the bestseller list, which is weird. You only need to sell 40. But then I'm thinking, my people don't support me. They don't care. They don't care. Because when they have already purchased, if they cared, if they truly cared about me and my well-being,
you tell me,
why don't you have a better work-life balance? Because I got to hawk books now.
Well, then you could hawk books on your 3 days where you're not doing shows.
I did. I did a lot of that. And I just said we got into the bestseller list on Amazon. That's all. But I'm saying I'd never told my own audience in a meaningful way during the first week of my release. You should maybe go buy the book on Amazon or Walmart. I know Barnes & Noble has some copies, although weirdly, not in Seattle. The Barnes & Noble, all of them outside of Seattle, had copies of the book. The Seattle one had no copies.
Like no copies as in they all got bought or never got put on the shelves?
They never got put on the shelves. Everywhere else had copies. The New York Union Square Barnes & Noble had it as a feature. And then I put another book on top of another one. And so it had two features, although only one was from Barnes & Noble. But even they were supporting me. But the Barnes & Noble in Seattle, the Northgate one, didn't have any of the books. You can buy it online, I guess, but they didn't have any in stock.
Interesting.
And what's that other third place books? What is it called?
Yeah.
Right? Lake Forest Park. Someone said they purchased their copy there and they've got some more on the shelves. But you can also buy online. It's called What's Killing America? Inside the Radical Left's Tragic Destruction of Our Cities. I hope you'll go ahead and purchase it. Show your support. Otherwise, I'll be sad. You don't want me sad. Or if you do, I won't be sad if you buy it. Or wait, what? No, I will be sad if you buy it. There you go. You pick the news. Story number one. The View co-hosts twist themselves into knots to defend Jamal Bowman amid fire alarm furor. Or story number two. Minneapolis cops OnlyFans account prompts an investigation. But it's what the mayor said. It's got people talking. Is he a subscriber? I don't know. We can find out if that's the story you want. 1-800-465-8770 for your answers. It's the Jason Rand Show.
You picked the topic on the Jason Rand Show.
Indeed you do. It was very close. Edging out the vote, however, by one. Is Minneapolis police officer's OnlyFans account prompts an investigation, but what the mayor is saying got everyone's attention. Comes to us from Fox News. They say this officer is being investigated by her department after they learned that she had an OnlyFans account where she was posting explicit photos and videos. I found out that OnlyFans is also non-sexual. I thought it was only for pornography. Apparently it's not.
Oh, you can do other stuff?
You can do whatever you want. I could technically create an OnlyFans account and just do hip-hop poetry or something, which I would pay for that.
I would,
I get canceled.
I'd probably pay to listen to you do hip-hop poetry.
According to Fox 9 Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Police Department launched an internal investigation into the 4th Precinct officer, who was not identified, after a citizen was pulled over by the officer and actually recognized her from her side work. Why don't we investigate the perv? Is he married, by the way? Let's find that out. The officer's OnlyFans page is not publicly available and is only accessible to her paid subscribers for a monthly fee. While police conduct their internal probe, the mayor's office said it might not be a problem for them. Quote, if all we're talking about is naked pictures behind a paywall, the mayor has no issue. However, the chief will determine if there are any policy violations. That's a spokesperson for Jacob Frey, the Minneapolis mayor. The officer's bio reads, 35-year-old, I can't say, free-spirited. It starts with mother in law, but not that.
Yeah.
Overly optimistic, creator of sexy content to please others. The account does not include any references to her being a police officer. But they don't say if there are any. How do they know? You think they purchased the media, the Fox 9 or 8 or whatever?
They probably had to do some investigative journalism.
Like, imagine signing up for that and saying, okay, I know you're seeing this $14.99 OnlyFans monthly fee, but it's just deep research. I've been looking into this account. I've been doing research on this account for a year and a half now, and I'm finally ready to go.
Well, you made me go down some sketchy alleys for research purposes.
I think, so here's the deal. It's weird because the mayor's office says if it's just nude photos, well, what if it was sex? What if it wasn't just nude photos? What if it was actual pornography? Would that matter? And as I was thinking about the story when I saw it on the rundown, I think it depends on the profession that we're talking about. Because if this was a teacher, I would probably say that this would be a distraction to students if they found out.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? I think we can all say that. And so is it fair then to terminate unless they have something that's written in their contract that says you can't do online pornography, whatever it is? But I feel like I would be okay or at least understand, maybe not be okay with, but understand why a school might terminate a teacher in this position, male or female. But for a cop, in which it's not public and it's not like this would be in any way, shape or form disruptive to her policing, maybe in her office it would be, but not to the general public. Because it's not like all of a sudden, I'm going to commit a felony so I can finally meet my favorite OnlyFans porn star versus everyone in the school is going to talk about it and it's going to prevent them from learning. I feel like I would give her a pass too, regardless, unless it was anything illegal, obviously. But you can't, I don't think you can get away with, I'm assuming you can't get away with that kind of stuff on OnlyFans.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it should be grounds for termination. Obviously, she opens herself up to, we'll call it, you know, conversation in the office amongst the precinct, but unless there's something specifically in the contract that says you can't do that.
They have a department policy that says officers are required not to exhibit any conduct that could compromise their efforts to enforce the law or that would discredit their agency. You might be able to argue that it could be seen as discrediting the agency, I guess.
Yeah, you could make that argument.
Would you have less respect for an officer who was also an amateur pornographer or porn star? Maybe.
I mean, if you knew, but I guess that one guy did know.
What is wrong with that dude to narc on her? Why would he do that? And yeah. I'm assuming it's a guy. I don't know.
Well, maybe he didn't think he was narking on her.
But who would he tell? It says he told on her. Why would he do that? What did he think he was going to get out of a ticket or something for doing that? Or maybe to your point, maybe he said it in passing. Like as he's being hauled in handcuffs. Oh, the OnlyFans detective has finally caught me. If it wasn't for those kids. Scooby-Doo. I'm tempted to give her a pass. Unless it's weird, kinky stuff, then, you know.
Are you talking handcuffs? Would that be crossing a line?
I think it would be crossing a line because that would be, I'm assuming she'd be using her handcuffs from the office.
Yeah.
Right? And if there was a uniform that was on at any point, and for all I know, again, I don't know if Fox 9 allowed their reporter to go ahead and sign up to do their research because all they have is a screenshot of the main page, which doesn't show anything. If she had her uniform on, that would be different because that would be her portraying herself as a cop. And one could argue that because she's using city property, she'd be trying to come off as an officer and using that for sexual gain, I guess. But if it's not that, if you couldn't tell that she's a cop based upon the content.
Yeah, I think she deserves a pass based on what we know.
Yeah, I'll give her a pass. Sign me up. For OnlyFans. I'm not joining her. I'm going to do what did we say we were going to do?
Hip-hop poetry.
Hip-hop poetry. I don't know what that is.
Isn't that just rap music?
Is it just Def Jam?
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Slam poetry would be way
slam
better.
Poetry for $9.99 a month. And I won't be wearing pants, but you won't be able to see because the camera's only focused on my beautiful face. It's a Jason Rancho.